Hello, you lovely lot. I wanted to take a moment to share an exciting announcement with you all. I will be doing a live show for Happy Mum, Happy Baby at the Podcast Show in London on the 22nd of May. This will be a live episode of this very podcast featuring me and a very special, soon to be announced, guest. Get ready for a candid conversation, unfiltered truths, laughs, invaluable non-judgmental advice, and lived experiences. Dive into the complexities of parenting while juggling work, relationships, and personal growth. And we'll be talking beyond the baby years. As well as the live episode, the show will also include a Q&A with both me and my guest. Tickets go on sale this Friday the 26th of April at 10 a.m, but anyone who is part of the Happy Mum Happy Baby newsletter will be getting early access to tickets on Wednesday the 24th of April at 10 a.m. To sign up to the newsletter and for more information about the event, please head to happymumhappybaby.com/events. I can't wait to see you there.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
And welcome to Happy Mum, Happy Baby, Parenting SOS. Now, every week I get to bring you honest, heartwarming and hilarious conversations about the highs and lows of being a parent. And on Parenting SOS, I get to explore parts of parenthood that we might want to know a little bit more about with the help of experts. In this month's episode, we're focusing on sleep. Now, sleep is one of those things I can guarantee no matter who you talk to, all parents want to get more of it. Yes, please. I would like some. Maybe we just sleep this whole episode. Maybe I just put a bed under the table. I'd be very happy with that. Well, today I am joined by sleep sisters Eve Squires and Gemma Fryer, the women behind Calm and Bright. Now, Calm and Bright offers information, support and guidance on sleep training that doesn't have to feel overwhelming. And I am so excited to have a chat with them today. Hello, Eve and Gemma.
Hello. Hello.
I mean, it's already been a giggle and we haven't even gotten to the reason why we're actually here.
Right. It's been a blast.
It's been a blast.
But I'm looking forward to talking about sleep. I really am.
I'm glad that you are, because that is what you're an expert on.
Yeah.
So if you were here and you're like, nah, yeah, not today.
No,
not
I don't today. Know. I can't help you. Troubling.
Of course, Andrew, but your voice is really calming already.
Oh, thank you. People do say that,
you
actually.
Have got a lovely calming
voice. I send people to sleep. My poor partner.
So let's talk about sleep. It's a weird thing, I think, that when you're a mum, it weirdly becomes a controversial topic.
Yes.
How does this happen?
It's so emotionally charged.
Yeah.
It's such an emotive topic because as mothers and fathers, you know, we're programmed to respond, to do sleep for our babies, which is exactly what you should do in the early months. And I think it's contentious because there's no one way to do it.
Mm.
And
it's so heated. It's the same with feeding, G. I often liken it to the feeding debate.
Absolutely.
Yeah. People feel really strongly about it either way.
Yep.
And I think the reason is that it seems to be that feeding and sleep are perceived as reflections on your worth as a parent. Mm. That's why.
Yeah.
But it's not at all. So I think that's why we feel so strongly, because we almost have an identity for me as a mother, my identity was that I was a responsive, attached parent who believed in XYZ, feeding on demand, tried to do good foods where I could, and cared about nothing more than their emotional security. Mm. And therefore, we choose things that are in alignment with what we believe in. And therefore, we have to almost sometimes make the other bad to justify. So say we're exhausted, right, and we've been co-sleeping as I did for years. I had to say that sleep training was bad because it has to be worth it. Like, I have to be doing this for a reason, right? Yeah. So we have to kind of hate or distance ourselves from the other. But the truth is that there doesn't need to be these two sides. Mm. And we're very much here to build that bridge.
But you're so right. It is sleep and feeding. Yeah. I think if either those are included as a topic on the Happy Mum, Happy Baby community even, which is, you know, meant to be judgment-free, there are people who really feel like they have to get their point across and kind of have to validate why they did what they did and why that's the right way of doing it.
Yeah. And I get it, because when I was exhausted, I was actually really against sleep training.
Wow.
So
really?
My story is that I was a super responsive on-demand parent, and I thought that sleep training, because I followed a few accounts and read a few books that had basically told me very clearly in no uncertain terms that it was barbaric and it was neglectful and we shouldn't be parents if we didn't want to wake up in the night and our children's needs don't stop when it falls dark. And I was fully on board with that. Mm. I didn't realise at the time that actually what was the toxin wasn't sleep teaching or training, it was the sleep deprivation. Because the greatest, most paradoxical thing for me as a parent then, and I know that this is mainstream thought, is that the very reason that I avoided sleep training was to be a patient, calm, responsive, creative, playful, attached parent. And guess what? The exhaustion ended up with me being hostile, emotionally volatile, snappy. The very reason I avoided sleep teaching was to be something that I wasn't, because I was so tired. And if I just got some sleep, I could have been the parent I wanted to be. But I didn't know that until I got to the other side. And I only got to the other side through absolutely not my own choice. I had a car crash with my 10-month-old baby in it because I was so exhausted. And we now know through our training and our pediatric sleep consultancy stuff that we are as impaired as if we were drunk and on drugs when we are having less than 5 hours sleep regularly. We are not safe. And that's why I was leaving the tap running in the paddling pool and not knowing my kid was there. And that's why I wasn't seeing the cars that were coming out. And when that happened, I literally, in that moment, it hit me that A, I wasn't safe as a parent. B, my child wasn't safe. C, really, is this how it's supposed to be? Dragging myself through the days only to dread the nights, to do it all over again. And these are the golden years. Aren't I supposed to be enjoying them if they're so fleeting?
And did you instantly think to yourself, it's the sleep?
Instantly.
Really?
I knew it. And I said, I have to get sleep sound.
I remember Mum moved in, didn't she, at that point? We were so worried about you.
Were you?
As a sister, did you recognise that
I didn't
happening?
Have children then.
Right.
I was living in London nursing, and I just remember that the contact was less, and we're so close, aren't we? And you just...
So close.
I always describe it as it was like she was switched off at the mains, and that's how it felt that you were. And I remember Mum moving in, and then... That was the start of change, wasn't it? And better rest for you.
When you look at the symptoms of depression and exhaustion, the ticks are unbelievably parallel. Maternal depression impacts upon children so much, and we know that exhaustion impacts so much upon depression. And one of the studies that absolutely blows my mind every time I say it, and it's looking at a group of 738 women in Australia, mothers, and they were tested clinically for postnatal depression. And 70% of the test group were officially depressed clinically. And after sleep intervention, just 10% of the same group were clinically measured as being depressed. In other words, if we were to apply these figures to UK maternal depression, around 82,000 women a year need not suffer with depression if they were just to get the sleep that they need.
I mean, the amount of times, I can remember with my first, Buzz would, you know, he'd settle himself, he'd go to sleep. It was all lovely.
Yeah.
Then we took him to Australia for 3 weeks. And when we were there, because of the time difference, I was like, I'm going to pat your bum, I'm going to sway you. And I'm going to help you go to sleep because we're in a hotel room and you won't go to sleep if we're in the hotel room. He got back home after 3 weeks. When we left him, he was like, what are you doing? I want you here. And I don't only just want you here. I want you to hold my hand while I fall asleep. What's going on? And then, you know, you try and kind of go, no, you self-soothe, it's fine, leave. Oh my gosh, I've never heard crying like it. There was no way that like we had changed things for him, and we had to address that in some way.
Of course.
And that was there was a lot of hand holding and
of course there was.
You know.
And that's okay though, because there is no such thing as a sleep problem until it's a problem for you.
That's what someone said. So I was saying to you earlier about one of our kids now being in our bed.
Yeah.
As a slightly older child suddenly getting in. And someone said to me, but do you mind?
Yeah. That's it.
No, I don't. Yes. I feel like he's telling us that he needs something and I'm listening to him.
Absolutely. Yes. And that is, I talk about a mother compass in the book and how your intuition, if it is feeling right, and it's then it is.
Yeah. So talk to me about Carmen Bright. Obviously, after your crash, which thankfully neither of you were hurt, but I imagine it really shook you up.
Yeah.
After that, how did you start changing things?
So I knew that what I didn't want to do was the whole cry it out where you leave them to it, right?
Right.
Now, I'm not judging upon that. I have a friend who did it with her sons. I know them. They're 60 and 18 and they're the most delightful, open-hearted boys you could hope to meet. So no judgment. But for me, it wasn't for me and I didn't want to do it. And we don't practice that. But I did know that what I was doing wasn't working. My 10-month-old was feeding every 45 minutes to 2 hours night and day, and her lovely, gorgeous Michelin rolls told me that she definitely did not need it. And I think the fact that she was 10-month-old really helped, because I knew, and I'd looked up on the NHS website and said from 6 months they don't necessarily need a night bleed, and I knew she didn't need 10. So I thought, I can at least take off one. So what I did, G, is I went, right, I'm not ready to do none. Or rather, I am, but she's not, I thought. Yeah. So I thought, what I can do is go, if she wakes within 3 hours, because that's a newborn kind of regularity of feeding, isn't it? I know it's not food, so I'm going to give comfort in another way. So for me personally, it was going in, it was touch. Sometimes it was picking her up. And of course, there was protest when that was going on. Mm. My mum moved in because she knew that I wouldn't have stood 20 seconds of that. And when I was in the sitting room with her, do you know, I remember while I was on the sofa, I remember her sat next to me and me going, I've got to go in. And it had been about 3 seconds. You know, she needs me. The classic, you know, in your gut, you know, pulling your guts out, pulling your heart out. And she went, darling, if you just listen for a little tiny bit, you'll hear that what she's doing is, you come back here right now. This is not what we agreed. It's not, where are you? Yeah. I need you. And I said, but I'm hearing, where are you? And she said, listen closer. And I went, you're right, she's cross. And she went, yes, she is. And I was okay with cross.
Right.
I wasn't okay with, you know, I'm alone, where are you? And so I set it out for a little bit. And I think it was about 40 minutes of up and down, a bit of settling. And every time she went down, Mum went, listen, that's her doing what you're asking her to do. She's okay. And I was going in every 2-3 minutes, like nothing at all, really, in the grand scheme of things. Night one, she slept for 6 hours straight the first night and then another couple of 3-hour chunks. Night two, she did 10 hours. Night three, she did 12 hours. And she is now 16, almost. She has had less than 5 broken nights, including being ill, since that day. Mm. And she is the most confident, kind, good, self-confident person with the most compassion you could ever hope to meet. And after that day, literally it was 3 days done, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I felt like a brand new person.
Really?
My spark came back behind my eyes. My immunity over time completely changed. I was always getting something. I don't now typically get ill. We know that sleep and immunity is really linked. And I took my number to the health visitors and said, whatever you do, give my number, please. If there are any mums that are absolutely on their knees, please give it to them. I'll help them. I'll do whatever I can. And I volunteered like that for 5 years. So that's how it started.
You got a bit of a reputation, actually, didn't you? Eve was known as the village crazy lady. Well, I called you the village crazy lady. But you would literally, you went on to have
Finn. Well, it's better than some things that are associated with the village lady.
Well, there is
that.
You went on to have Finn. Quite, you know, there's quite a small gap between Eve's first and second. And even then, you were still volunteering. And I remember you going to people's houses, helping them, and then coming back breastfeeding Finn and going to bed.
I knew that healthy babies above the age of 6 to 8 months or whatever were capable of doing really well at night with perhaps a night feed if you wanted to, or a couple. And so I knew that if I gave him the opportunity to do it, he was perfectly capable. It was me that was in doing the ings, as we call them, the feeding, the staying, the patting, the rocking, which, by the way, there's nothing wrong with. They're wonderful, beautiful things that are essential in the first 6 months and beyond sometimes. I knew that if I just said, you're all right, buddy, you've got this, and did what you did naturally with your first, which, by the way, is amazing. I did not. I knew that he would be, all right, Mum, I've got this. You know, and he did, and so did the next one, and so did the next one.
Yeah.
And then after 5 years of 100% success rate, and one of them was twins, and I think the dad, Mark, I'll never forget him, he said to me, I'd paid you £1,000 to do that. And I went, I don't want any money. I'm not doing it for the money. He said, OK, well, forget the money. Do you love helping people? And I went, I do. And he said, then take it to the world. And I thought, I can't do that. What do I know? I'm not qualified. And that's when I went on to qualify. And then I had the confidence to do it. But not until I'd qualified, interestingly, even though I had 100 families under my
belt.
I didn't have the confidence at all because I wasn't trained.
And when
first.
You were training, do you feel like you still took on things that surprised you?
Honestly, I promise you that 90% of what I do, I didn't learn on the course.
Really?
And it's completely different because whilst typical sleep training approaches would be like, right, the room temperature, this is the, you want all the practical surface stuff, the wake windows, and this must be at this time, which we don't prescribe to at all. We're very much baby-led. So if your baby's knackered after an hour, but their nap gap is 2 hours, put them to sleep, you know, it's fine. But in terms of the rigidity of it, we weren't down for that at all. So we just went for, well, let's do it as and when. And if they're tired, let's put them down. And we don't, we just don't go along like that, do we?
No.
We're not for that at
all.
And
I'm very much a routine person. I'm a typical nurse. Like, I like things just so.
Yeah. So I guess, well, how are things different with you when your little ones come along? Because it's also worth telling the listeners that you've got four children each.
Yeah, we have four children each.
You two are. Of four, your mum had four.
Yes.
So it's busy households.
Yeah, busy, busy. And I remember I came on board when Louis was born, my second son. And I remember you ringing me and I was in London nursing. I remember you saying, Gem, I've got like 10 families I need help with. And I was like, darling, I love what you're doing. I'm so proud of you, but I'm practising in London. I love my job as a nurse. And you said,
I'm saving lives, you said.
Yeah, that's it. I'm saving lives because I was working in acute medicine. I was really enjoying my practice. I wanted to be a nurse from like the age of about six. Yeah. And I said, I love what you're doing, but no, thank you. And you said, please, Gem, just this one family. And I remember supporting them and having a breakthrough. I still remember their names. It was 10 years ago. And then I remember ringing you in tears and saying, oh my gosh, we are actually saving lives in this work. We are. And thanking you and like, please let me come on board. And that was 10 years ago.
And that's it. We're interested in how was your journey to birth?
Yeah.
To conception. Did you have any difficulties with your parents, your parental, maternal, paternal relationships as a child? Like, how do you feel about protest and upset? What does it do to you when you hear crying?
Because so it's often not about sleep at all, is it?
No.
It's more than that.
Yeah. It really is. Like, for example, it's typical that if you've had a really difficult time getting your baby earth side, for example, Gemma's experienced a great deal of baby loss herself. I'm very fortunate that I haven't. Mm. Then why on earth would you want to have any kind of suffering or upset when they're here? You've wanted them for so long. So that's all relevant stuff that we're interested in, we look into.
So it's just so different for each person. And going back to my children, I just had you as my teacher and I'd seen what you'd done and Toby slept very well. I think a little bit of me was quite smug because I was like, it's because I'm a children's nurse. And then I had Louis.
Wow. So that is important to know, isn't it?
Yes. The difference. Yeah. And I remember, this is so funny, I remember calling the paediatric ward where one of my best friends is a consultant and saying to him, he doesn't sleep. What's going on? And this was on week three or four. And he had to remind me, yes, love, that's really normal. You're okay. Because he had reflux. He had a really difficult birth. We were at osteopaths getting everything going. And he just didn't sleep for a whole year.
Yeah.
And that was him. Yeah. You know, that was him. And that was really difficult. But it really helped me in supporting families, knowing that it's just not linear. You know, there's so much to it. And going back to the baby loss, like I've experienced baby loss four times. And Posey was one of a twin. I had to co-sleep with her. Because there were so many times when we didn't know that she was going to be okay.
Right.
We nearly lost her about 13 or 14 times. I got offered to have a termination at week 20 because I was so sick. And so I needed to be close to her just to check that she was real.
Yeah.
And I talk about baby loss a lot on the page and so many people come to me and they say, so how did you do it? And I said, just at your pace. Just like with anything with parenting, it's got to be at your pace. It's just so important, isn't it?
Yeah, there are no shoulds, none.
Mm, absolutely. So if someone comes to you, you literally start with all the stuff around it first.
Yeah.
Then what happens?
So let's say that we get someone coming in. Let's say she's got a, I don't know, what's the most common, 12 months maybe?
Yeah.
12-month-old baby, let's say they're feeding and they won't, my baby won't go to sleep without, and then you can fill in the gaps, rocking, feeding, patting. I mean, we all know, people will be going, yes, of course. And the really simple and I think quite freeing thing to know, other than the physical, of course, right? If they've got eczema or digestive issues, that's that. But apart from that, the way in which a baby or child goes to sleep or back to sleep is the way in which they will come to believe they need, just like you said when you introduced the rocking. Now, there's nothing wrong with staying with your child and holding their hand, breastfeeding to sleep. They're magical, wonderful things to do that both of us have loved doing. However, if for you, when you're putting your baby down, they are then, of course, waking up and going, where's that breast? Where's that bottle? Mm. Where's that jig? Where's that rock? Where's that pram? That's fine again. But if you want them to take the sleep they're capable of taking and arguably need to feel their best selves, and, you know, the impact upon sleep is profound upon our bodies and brains, then the way in which that often needs to happen, not always, some babies can be rocked to sleep and then sleep for 12 hours, but it's very much in the minority, then if you want them to take those 11 to 12 hours that they're capable of sleeping from 6 to 8 months, the way is that they fall asleep, not on their own, of course, but they fall asleep safe and warm and in the knowledge that they're loved, and you give them the opportunity to do it themselves with your support and love, so that when they come into light sleep, which we're all programmed to do, to see if there's a bear in the cave or a snake on the rock, as of days of old, we're supposed to come into light sleep, they go, oh yeah, this is like exactly the vibe that I was in when I fell asleep. I'm cool. Then they go back to sleep.
Yeah. You've posted something about this. It's stirring, sleep stirring.
Stir to sleep.
Stir to sleep. What is this?
Yes.
It's I've never heard
magic.
Of this.
It is actual magic.
So it's not ours, by the way. Yeah. I just want to say.
We learned about it on our OCN course, which is the sleep accreditation. But basically, if a baby is waking up at the same time each night, or indeed an early wake, you stir them in their sleep. And what that does is it tricks their body clock into going into a deeper phase of sleep. So you're bringing them into light sleep artificially, if you like, and it can reset the whole night.
And that's only for habitual wakes. But let's say lots of people have habitual wakes. Yeah. So let's say 11 o'clock, right? Yep. That means that they're in light sleep at 11 o'clock. Whatever time it is, they're in light sleep because they're waking up. So if we go in like 25, 30 minutes before and we do something that we're not waking them, it's not called wake to sleep. It's important people remember that, because then you're in a whole world of hurt.
But if I just wake you up in the middle of the night.
I want more sleep, so I'm going to wake you up. If they stir them by, and for some babies it's literally you open the door and they've stirred, but it might be that you literally need to do this, you know, and I'm stroking Jem's cheek, then that's enough. But all we're doing is, we know we've done this successfully when their body physically acknowledges it, so they might roll over or rub their nose or sigh. And when we've done that, what we're doing is we're taking them straight out of that cycle and tricking them into the next one, so that when 11 o'clock comes, they're not in light sleep.
It is magic.
It is good. But it's different to wakes that are there because there's an incentive, like a feed or rock, which is lovely, but it might not be going hand in hand with the best possible sleep that they can have.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
One thing that makes my sleep better is organisation. So knowing that those bags are packed, their school uniforms
are
out.
That's a good point.
That just makes me... It takes out some of the pressures of the morning.
Are you naturally like that? Or have you always learned to...
I've always done it. But I used to go to school in London. So I used to be up really early.
Right.
So I used to be up at six.
Yeah.
And my uniform was there in the order that I put it on.
That's all you two. I'm going to rub both of you. Like, I don't know.
But then Tom doesn't do that.
Okay, cool.
And he still manages to get out the door on time.
And that's the trouble. I can get four kids out the door with packed lunches, uniforms, PE kits, cooking ingredients in 25 minutes. But I'm going to die of a heart attack at about 45. It doesn't work for me. But the trouble is, because I pull it off, I think I've got this. Well, I haven't.
It's always like a test to yourself. Done it again in 30 minutes.
Yeah, but your heart rate during that 25 minutes.
I mean, luckily I don't have a fancy watch, because if I did, it would be going
off. It would be beeping.
Go to the hospital. Go to the hospital.
Beta blockers now.
Right, I asked you to bring in your three most asked questions. So that's what we do in Parenting SOS. You bring in your most three asked questions.
Yes.
Gemma's like, oh, yes, I remember this part of it. Right. So your number one most asked question is, why won't my baby sleep?
Yes.
I know I've asked that question many a times.
It's so hard. But the truth is, what we touched on earlier in a sentence is that pre-6 months, they're not meant to sleep.
Yes.
So I've got a gorgeous best friend at the moment who has literally a 12-week-old baby. And she's like, they're not sleeping. And I'm like, I know.
Yeah.
And they're not going to sleep.
Yeah. They're not programmed to, are they?
Because their tummies are small. Mm. They haven't had the melatonin that comes in. So pre-6 months, they're not going to, and that's okay. And there's no such thing as bad habits, right? So we can feed rock contact wear to our heart's content or discontent, because it's really bloody awful sometimes. So that's normal. But beyond 6 months, and that's what we're talking about here, why doesn't my baby sleep? The answer is typically, usually, the way in which they fall asleep is that the parent is doing sleep for them. So they're taking them over the finish line to sleep, which there's nothing wrong with, but they're doing sleep for them so that they're not able to do it themselves, but only at the moment.
Yeah.
So as long as we give them the message through our actions that you need me to do this. We're not trying to say that, by the way. We're inadvertently saying we hold hands to go to sleep or you're in my bed from 1 a.m. to go to sleep, which is fine. They are learning and you are learning as the parent that this is the only way we can do it.
Yeah.
And that's why when they come into light sleep, like I said to you, they're like, well, where's mum's bed and where's this? Because not because it's all they can do, but it's all they know.
Yeah. It's like you said, certain things, it's only a problem when it becomes a problem.
That's exactly.
Yeah. And knowing that you don't have to choose between a well-attached baby and a baby who sleeps, because there is a way to do it that is really, really responsive if you're ready to make changes. You don't have to struggle on if it's really difficult. There's other ways to
but
do
yeah,
it.
But yeah, if you're getting sleep with them in your bed like you are, happy days.
Brilliant.
Like you're getting a cuddle, they're rested.
Yeah.
But you might have two families in exactly the same situation, and one might say, we get sleep, they're only young once, I'm loving it. I wake up not rested, but I'm all right. I can get through. I'm able to do my job. I'm able to be a mum. And the other one with exactly the same amount of disturbances through the invariable kicking and elbows and nostrils and stuff might say, I feel separate to my husband.
Yeah,
I'm snapping at my kids.
Yeah.
I don't feel I can go back to work. So that's the person that might want to think about sleep teaching, not this person.
Yeah.
Yet they have exactly the same setup, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Next question is, will sleep training damage our bond?
Oh, this is such a huge thing. And the reason why I didn't sleep train and why I had this little car crash, which was minor, and it was that my sole purpose on this planet is to create babies that are emotionally secure and safe. Nothing else, really, other than the mandatory feeding and stuff. And this is the opposite of that in my head before I did it. What I now know, 15,000 families later, 15 years later, a book later, and just the joyful vocation that is freeing families from exhaustion, I now know that sleep and sleep teaching separately and together are attachment enhancing because we cannot be the parents we want to be unless we're rested. And I'm not rested lots of the time and I see the difference. But also, I think there's a really strong argument that if we want to be need-meeting parents, I mean, who doesn't, right?
Yeah.
How can we not include sleep in the equation? Mm. Because in, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where we see that you can't get to self-actualization and dreaming big and being your best self if you haven't got the absolute basics, and sleep is the bottom. Mm. It's like the foundation. So I think that actually, not only will our babies feel more chilled, they'll make friends easier at school, they'll learn better, they'll be able to separate from you better when you do need to go to work or they need to go to nursery or school. Not only will they have that and better immunity and feel great about themselves and perceive the world in a different way, but also you will be able to be the parent that you dreamed of. Like, I so often go, hey, let's make a fort out of a cardboard box. I'm not going to do that when I'm shattered, or I might, but I might do it really begrudgingly and be like, oh, why did I start this sort of thing? So the answer to the question, will it harm my attachment with my baby, is it's going to enhance it beyond your wildest dreams.
But it's so important to talk about crying because it's important. And the reason it's important is because it's the main obstacle to not doing teaching. Because as mothers, we're programmed to rush in to rescue.
Yeah.
It can feel really counterintuitive not to do that. So it's really important to say that with responsive teaching, even with the most responsive teaching, there is going to be crying.
Yeah.
Through our actions and through our method, we're visiting constantly. So we are reassuring our babies and we're
saying...
Or
in the room, if that's the method in the room, you choose.
And we're saying, my darling, I love you, you're safe, I'm here, I'm always going to come back, but I'm going to teach us how to do this a different way because what we're doing isn't working. What we're doing is brutal at the moment.
Yeah.
So the crying happens, but what our families tell us is they felt that they were in the room so much and they noticed such a quick reduction in the level of protest, in the time it took for their babies to go to sleep, that they're noticing that straight away.
Yeah.
And how is it that when you're doing sleep training, the crying is damaging their brains, but when they're crying because they can't have the lolly that you really need to not give them because it's not great and you're just about to have dinner, why doesn't that damage their... So there's a lot of... I think the biggest thing I would say is there's so much misconceptions. Mm. We call them the wild untruths that shame parents, and not intentionally perhaps, but parents end up feeling very ashamed for even considering the dirty word that is sleep training.
Well, your final question of the three was, do your plans include crying?
It's a yes and a no.
Yeah.
So there is no crying in our plans. We don't go, put your baby in their cot, let them cry, and then go in every this, that and the other. What we say is we're going to stop doing the thing that isn't working for you and your baby.
Yeah.
And when you do that, there is probably going to be, in response to making changes to behaviours and patterns that aren't working for your family at all, that's why you reached out, in response to that, there's going to be some protests and upset. So are they part of the plans? Does it do the teaching, the crying? Absolutely not. Will crying happen when I make changes to sleep? Almost certainly. So it's a yes and a no.
Yeah, that's a really good way to describe it.
So our nap gap, our wake windows are much shorter than most people's because it works. So at 4 weeks, they don't really want to be awake any longer than 45 minutes. Right. And that means that in that time, that's the nappy and the feed. So basically they want to sleep. Right. And then every month thereafter, so 2 months, it's an hour. So it's 15 minutes more. So it's an hour.
Yeah.
And from the age of 1 month to 12 months, you just add on 15 minutes per month. That's it.
Yeah.
And if you follow those nap gaps. Right. Yeah. So for 6 months, it would be 2 hours. For 7 months, 2.25. For 8 months, 2.5. Right.
Yeah.
If you follow those wake windows of ours, which we give out for free because it's so transformative in itself,
really,
and
is.
You feed right before, obviously if they're reflexy you need to keep them up right a bit afterwards, but let's say they're not and you allow them to go down drowsy bit awake and you give them a bit of help, and if it doesn't work after 15 minutes, get them up and try again later, or have a pram nap, or have a contact nap. I say just follow the nap gaps. They're literally like
nap gaps are huge.
Everything.
I mean, it's almost worth having a fourth four.
Yeah.
You know where we are.
You know we won't tell you not to.
But everyone told me that three was the magic number, but it's blooming chaos.
Four is mental.
Four evens it out a bit, I think.
We were talking about this to somebody yesterday, weirdly. And four is hard, right? Okay, I have the wrinkles to show it. But if, when someone asks you, are you done? When you're done, you go, I'm done.
I'm
like,
done.
You're sure.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
If you go, I think so. I'm not sure you're done. But don't blame me, because I'm not getting an invoice for the nappies or anything. I'm staying out of this. I should have shut my mouth. That's the story of my life.
I quite like even numbers, so I'm a four girl. That's the only reason
I do like even numbers. It's crazy. Right, we ask the Happy Mum, Happy Baby community for some questions.
Right.
So we've got a few. So one says, how do we shift from one to two babies and them sharing a room?
So staggered bedtimes, basically.
Oh, really?
So I say to start together and then stagger. So doing a bath together is really lovely.
Yeah.
It's really nice for bonding, and then pajamas, even a story together. But if you've got a newborn baby, just do the bath, pop them in a sling, you know, you can do bedtime that way. And I think it's good to keep it quite chilled because it might be that your older child might want a slightly later night, or, you know, if baby's there, that's a big change and they might want to be involved in that a bit more. So it's just like going through the flow and kind of, I say, walking through it. So it will change, you know, all the time.
And we also say that the older child can really enjoy the fact that they have to be quiet because they're up later.
Yeah.
So they've got the kudos.
Yeah,
so you said that Louis used to really, because Louis and Kit share, and he used to really enjoy being like, I'll be quiet for Kit, Mum. Like, yeah. as in, I've got this, you know. So they quite like being in on the conspiracy. Yeah. Yeah.
And just staggering bed by half an hour can make such a difference. So Kit goes to bed half an hour before Louis, and Louis will go up and he'll give him a kiss on the cheek.
And they have to be quiet because the other one's asleep, which they actually do, weirdly. Yeah. They do comply.
And does it mean, doing that, I imagine it means that you get that little bit of bonding time with each child.
Yeah,
they all get their moment with you.
Yeah, just that little bit of time.
Yeah. Mm. I like this a lot. It's funny, isn't it? I think when you have one, so much thought goes into what that is going to look like. And then the second comes along, you're like, how am I going to manage
what this?
What's this?
It's really tricky. I remember thinking, the other thing, I don't know if this is normal or not, I'm sure it must be, but I had genuine heartache that how would I love... Did you get this?
Oh, when you were pregnant with
second. And would it take away from the pot of Tilly, who was my firstborn? Would it take away from her... And of course it doesn't. We have we have unlimited pots.
Yeah,
it seems
absolutely. If anything, it grows.
Yeah,
seeing that your first child love your second child just makes you go, oh my god, I love you even more now.
Yeah,
how is that possible?
I thought
I loved you to the max.
And what a gift you're giving them.
Yeah,
a sibling.
I've always found that my kids actually sleep really well when they're sharing a room.
Yes.
And something I thought it would always be awful. Like my middle child has really bad. We used to have really bad night terrors. He used to wake up screaming in such hysterics, really, hysteria. But he would literally snap out of it and it would be like nothing had happened.
Yeah.
But he would never wake his brother up. Ever.
Really?
Yeah. Ever.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest concerns is I can't do sleep training because I'm going to wake. But honestly, I reckon I don't know if I've had a sibling disturbed in the whole time, which is weird because they almost should be.
Yeah.
But it's weird, they don't.
I think they just get used to each other's noises.
They do, that's true.
It's almost like a natural white noise.
And we always say that, by the way, if you are room sharing, either get one of the big ones. If they're a good sleeper, get them out in your room, camping on the floor for a bit and do it.
Yeah.
Or have them in there, but tell them, like communicate, you know, we're going to be doing this, but they're going to be okay and I'm going to be there with them. It's, you know, it's okay. But also to pop white noise on in the same room, just completely... sorts that out. So, but we don't really get disturbances.
No.
But that is one of the main objections, alongside the crying.
Yeah.
It's I don't want to disturb my husband who gets up early. So, or the siblings. That's a big one.
Yeah.
But it's not a thing.
Yeah, it's not a problem really.
Actually, our three had to share a room for a year. Only a couple of years ago.
Really?
Bedtime, very lovely.
Yeah. Really?
They
enjoy it, don't they?
From room to room to room. Everyone's just together.
Yeah, and they're together and they'll have memories of that, which is so lovely.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Next question. I often nurse to sleep. Any tips for when the time comes to stop?
So keep nursing if you want to nurse, but just separate feeding slightly little bit from sleep.
Like a second.
You're doing a lovely feed and then... you know, enabling self-settling in the most responsive way.
Yeah.
And then babies naturally wean themselves when you do that.
Mm. I can remember when I started weaning through the night, I suddenly realised as well that every time they cried in the night, it was a feed.
Yeah.
So actually kind of going, well, what will happen this time if I go in and just give them a cuddle?
Yeah.
You know, just kind of
exactly.
So you got curious almost.
Yeah.
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 And did it, what
yeah,
happened?
It did. Yeah.
It worked.
They just, they just wanted
amazing.
A cuddle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Someone has said, is sleep training possible for babies with issues like colic or reflux?
Over to the nurse.
It's definitely possible. It's really important to acknowledge that if you have a difficult start, that might be a traumatic labour, it might be a journey to conception, or it might be that your baby has reflux and pain, their sleep will be harder to sort out because they will be on high alert if they're uncomfortable or they're in pain or their feeding needs are different.
Mm-hmm.
You can still get good rest. So there are ways to work around that. I'm a huge advocate of natural remedies and things that can help. So with eczema and reflux, you know, inflammation starts in the gut. So giving a really good non-dairy probiotic can help hugely. Just know that there is hope when you're in that phase and your baby has reflux. It is impossible. Mm. It's so difficult and it adds a whole other dynamic. So go gently, know that this is not forever. And when those symptoms are managed, we can absolutely get the rest that you need.
If you want it, there's an end. I think the hope is so important.
Yeah, it really
because
is.
Because I think it's feeling like it's never ending.
Yeah.
And this is your life now.
Yeah.
It is.
I think that's
and that's what your reality is telling you.
Yeah.
You know,
it is.
When you're in it, it's very much feels permanent, but it isn't.
And that you're the only one going through it.
Mm.
I can remember going to a baby yoga thing with my first and I can remember I don't know why they did it, but the start of every session, you'd go around the circle and talk about how much the kids had slept.
Wow.
But one mum hysterically went, he slept for 45 minutes last night. But it was a laugh. But you could see the pain
agony
behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just remember going, oh, my God, like...
Yeah.
That's not sustainable.
No. Brutal.
But I did actually see that mum on a walk years later, and I told her that I thought about her often.
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, thankfully that stopped.
That's okay. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Oh, I remember having a mum. I'll never forget her, ever. And she literally is in my heart all the time. She's there all the time. And she phoned me up right in the early days. I think it would have been a good 7 years ago.
Yeah.
The first thing she said, she didn't say, hi, I'm inquiring about sleep, because it was through to me at the time, of course. Yeah. It was just one-man show. And she said, I can't walk up these stairs again. I'm going to jump down these stairs with my baby. My baby's in my arms. He's in my arms. And I want to jump down the stairs now because I can't walk up these stairs again because I'm too tired and I can't do it anymore. Oh. And I thought, shit, I'm not a psychologist. I'm out of my depth here. But I also thought, I'm the person on the other end of the phone here.
Yeah.
So I thought, I've got to do what I can. So we spoke and I said, let's go up. So anyway, she of course went and walked in. She was staying with her mum in what was the mum's, you know, like the room that's not the room sort of thing, the tiny, tiny box room, with her baby, who was at the time 8 months old. She didn't have a job. She couldn't work. She was absolutely dead on her feet, like she was done. And she was, I don't like to say suicidal, but she was absolutely considering that, because they say about suicide, they say it's nobody ever wants to die. They don't want to keep on feeling the way they're feeling now. And that's all it is. And we've stayed in touch, and she contributed to the book and everything. And she is now going out to raves. The child is 8 years old. He's doing brilliantly at school. They say he's like a genius. She's got her own house. She's got her own job. And she attributes the whole thing to getting that sleep, and I'll never forget her.
Yeah,
and that's amazing. Why we do what we do.
And also being that person that is there, I think, you know, one of the things, a statistic that I talk about a lot, the leading cause of death in new mums is suicide. And how much of that is linked to sleep. If we're saying that depression is linked to sleep, you know, so much of that. And I think so many women need a person there to just go, I've got you.
Yeah.
The key here is the support. And when I say support, I don't actually necessarily mean the one-to-one which we offer where they have us in their pocket on the WhatsApp and we do the voice notes and they listen to us talking. We say, oh, do you know what? Hold off a bit longer. That's okay. And we give all the and oh my goodness, and we celebrate with them. You did 45 minutes in a row, as in a stretch rather than 10, and all of that. But the key is the compassion. That is the difference, is we are genuinely care.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're bringing families back together through the power of rest. And I think Shakespeare called it nature's soft nurse. Sleep is just lush, and it is.
I mean, I feel like I would quite like you to leave me voice notes on my WhatsApp.
I mean, just down for that. Yeah, I do a range of accents if you're interested.
Well, I love an accent. Final question from the Happy Mum, Happy Baby community is, how do I get my 3- and 5-year-old to sleep in their own bed?
Right.
I cuddle them to sleep every night. So this is obviously someone who, this is the situation, and she's not happy with
it. You basically start outside of the bedroom. Our main advice with toddler sleep is it's normal for toddlers to need extra support because their worlds are growing and expanding and they're forming different relationships. They're exerting their autonomy, which we want. So starting out of the bedroom is where we start. We have something in our plans which is so simple. Can I share this, sis?
Share whatever you want.
It's called Golden Time, and it's literally 10 minutes a day where you don't have your phone with you. Mm-hmm. It is led by them, and you're giving them that one-to-one time, connecting with them, so that when it's bedtime, you're saying, oh, darling, I loved that time today. Can we do it again tomorrow? If you have some good sleep tonight, we can do that. It's not about a reward or a big fancy thing. It's time.
Yeah.
Throughout the routine, it doesn't have to be a long bedtime routine. You're saying, so you've done your teeth. We've chosen one story because that's what we're going to have. We've had our golden time today. We've had a cuddle. I love you. Here's your water, so you don't need a drink. Here's your blanket, so you won't be cold. That is negating demands.
Yeah.
And you've had a wee, so you don't need one. I love you. And I'll see you in the morning, you know? Yeah, that is.
And the worst thing you can say when you do the cot to bed migration is, make sure you stay in your bed all night. It hasn't even occurred to them to get out.
You're telling them to get out if you say that, aren't you?
Giving them the idea. It's like going, make sure you don't look under the carpet near the door for the key that's going to get you out of your jail cell sort of thing. Like, don't give them the idea. I'm not saying beds are jail cells. I'm just saying they haven't even occurred
to them. Put the idea in their head. If you're saying, don't get out of bed, you just simply say, I will see you in the morning.
Yeah. The end of this podcast is you finishing some sentences for me.
Lovely.
So, Eve, we'll start with you. Being a parent means...
having a massive mirror held up in your face to show you all the things that you need to work on and love yourself more, and all the things that you get triggered by, because our triggers for me are our signposts to healing.
Yeah.
And basically reparenting yourself so that you're giving yourself enough love to give themselves permission to do the same and to love themselves that much too.
Yeah. Yeah, because so much of our triggers in our kids' behaviour is from our
stuff.
Yes.
Our stuff. I love the triggers. They're pearls for me, the triggers.
Yeah,
so
really?
If I'm like, why do you always... And I'm really irate. I go, not at the time, obviously. I just keep shouting, by the way, at the time. But later, I'll go, what was that about? And then I dig a bit and I keep digging. And then I go, oh, it was because I felt really embarrassed that I wasn't together this morning, so I was projecting about that. When did I last not feel together? And you need time and space to do that, and that's hard. But I think that the triggers are pearls for us to shine up.
I love that so much.
Gemma, being a parent means...
Oh my gosh, so much. And just wearing your heart outside of your body in those little people that you love. And I think parenting is beautiful, but it's also brutal.
Yeah.
And it can be those things simultaneously, can't it? So it's knowing that that is really normal.
Next sentence. Mm. If I could tell you one thing, it would be... Gemma, why don't you go first this time?
Oh my gosh. So it's really normal to lose yourself when you're a mother. And a wise woman told me when I was pregnant with my first son 13 years ago that mothers are very good at finding things. And you will find yourself. I love that flamingo analogy, how you lose your pink, how flamingos lose their pink, and that it takes sometimes years to get that back, but you will. So if you feel lost, that's okay, but you will find yourself because we're very good at that.
I love that. I love that. I remember someone saying to me in the thick of it with 406, you know, so it was a friend who didn't have children. She said, so other than kids, what's going on for you? And I burst into tears because I didn't have anything else to say. There was nothing going on with me. I didn't know what music I liked, what food I liked, what my style of clothes were. It was basically dirty, unwashed was my style at the time. So it
but
comes
beautiful,
back.
No less.
Thank you, my love.
Aww.
I would say, because I'm not just got my sleep hat on here, G, I've got my... you know, life hat on, and I would say nothing changes if nothing changes. So if you want there to be change, if you want to feel like you're living your authentic life or feel rested or feel whatever, if it's not working for you now, you need to do something different for it to feel different.
And finally, I'm happy when...
I'm happy when I drown out all of the noise and anything that doesn't actually feel in alignment with what I feel. So I like to talk about this protective bubble, and that is when I'm happiest, when it's the six of us or other people that I let in, because there's so much information out there and so many shoulds. It helps to take the pressure off, and that's when I'm happiest. And when my house is clean for about half a day. That also makes me very happy.
So true. For me, it's those little moments that you talked about. So, like the other day, my 14-year-old had all these mess that he made outside with his friends. And he, for an hour, I had the broom in my hand and he would not go to tidy it up because he was embarrassed.
Yeah.
And my 9-year-old went, I'll come with you if you want, mate. I'll help you. And Finn said, mate, I'll give you £5 of my allowance next month if you do. And he went, I won't take a penny. I'm doing it because I love you.
Oh.
That's what makes me happy.
That is the kindness.
So when my children display kindness to those in need, then I go, I've nailed it.
Yeah.
And I don't care if
anything
else.
And those are the moments where you kind of elbow each other and go, look at this.
Oh,
look
my gosh.
This.
Yeah.
Or you just stop and take a moment, because I think there is so much other noise. There's so much other crap. There's so much expectation that we place on them. So much guilt.
Yeah.
So much pressure.
Mm.
And actually, those little moments, they are so organic.
Yes.
And that is who they are.
Yeah.
That's way of all the demands and everything else we place on
them.
Dare
I say it, we kind of did that in a way. We raised them like that.
Yeah.
And that's okay to take that moment and go, we're all right. We're doing
a bit of
all
a pat
right.
on the
it's
back.
It's all right. Yeah, it's all right.
We're doing
it's
okay.
All right.